Our second reading comes from page 77 of the Big Book. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. And now I would like to introduce Mary T. from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Thank you. Hi there. Mary T. here, alcoholic. Charlie, thanks. I felt the same way you did. I thought, I think I just want to listen to these guys. I don't need to say anything. And I also want to thank Katie. As I listened to your story, I realized how much we have in common in our backgrounds in regard to having my main resentment when I came into the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous were my parents. And I too had gone to some kind of a, well, I liked the guy. He gave me Valium, so I thought he was good, the psychiatrist. But my main complaint all the time was about my father. So I'll get into that in a minute. First of all, I want to say thanks for having me come and speak and share, hopefully, my experience, strength, and hope this step. I realize, as I have said before, that I've learned to work these steps a little better than when I first came in. I think at first I looked at these things as like something to get done and then you graduate. And, you know, now that's done. Now I'm done. I'm fine. And I'm what I believe am a seasoned beginner. My life goes on. There's different things I have to bring through the steps each year. And every time I go through the steps, I have a deeper understanding of what the black lines are trying to get me to do. And basically what I see is that they're trying to get me in a relationship with the God of my experience, and which is like a best friend to me today. I didn't know that for almost 20 years. I think I thought intellectually I put a God in my mind and, you know, I could choose anything I wanted. So I had kind of like a Santa Claus God or whatever. And as life went on and with what I went through with the first 20 or so years of my sobriety, I realized that I had created a limited God. An intellectual God, one that kind of was a checkoff list type thing. If I just do these steps right, then I'll be fine and that's it. And so I missed the third step prayer and I missed the seventh step prayer. Not that I didn't say it the way it was, but I would say it, my actions were take away my difficulties so I can better do my will. The seventh step prayer for a long time was, you know, grant me strength to go out from here to do my bidding. Now that I know what's wrong, then I thought I could do something. And so for me, moving into the eighth step has changed. In the very beginning, I followed exactly what my sponsor said, and I'm eternally grateful. I will tell you that experience. That experience was when I was done and I didn't know how to make amends to my folks. My sponsor, very wise woman, Beverly Douglas, and she said, she pointed out, and I recently read it in another piece of literature, what do I define harm as? How have I harmed somebody? And she basically said, where have I deliberately misled someone for my own gain and my own benefit? And I knew I had misled. I had moved from Massachusetts to Southern California, and I never let my folks know anything about me or their first grandchild. I just absolutely just amputated them. And so for a long time, they never knew really how I was or what was happening, and I got sober out there 5 years after I had gone to California, and when I did this first inventory, and they were on it, Bev said, how did you harm them? And I said, well, I just deliberately wouldn't let them know. what I was doing. I deliberately did that just to, like, retaliation. And so she instructed me to do something that I'm eternally grateful for, hindsight, that I just followed direction on this. And she said, I want you to either write them or talk to them once every 2 weeks. And I want you to say what you think a grandparent would want to hear about their grandchild, or what you think a parent would want to hear about their child. You are not to mention Alcoholics Anonymous or anything else. You're just supposed to do this. And I had just started working at a company, and it was a brokerage company that had an 800 line. And I was glad because, money was always a problem being a single parent. I remember calling the first time and I said, hi. And they said, how are you? And I said, well, I'm okay. And I said, I just got this job. And so I told my dad what it was. And it was my dad's first job was in a brokerage firm. I had no idea about that. My father was a man that was 47, 48 years old when I was born. He was in the First World War. It was a lot of things. I was raised by nursemaids. And so it was a lot I didn't know about my dad. And so every week or every 2 weeks, I'd call and we'd talk about the stock market. I mean, I couldn't believe, God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. And this built and built and built. And I think I was about 2 or 3 years sober when they finally came out. And I remember doing my direct amends at that time. And it was very heartfelt. I just remember that it was the first time I had done a direct amends, and the outcome was amazing. So that was how I started with this, and I checked it off, and it was a good result, and that was fine. And many times through the years with the people that I don't know if they'll even talk to me anymore, and one of them was a sibling, and I remember that once again I picked up a piece of paper or a postcard. And every 2 weeks, I would just send a postcard to my sibling and say, Mom told me this was happening with your, my niece or nephew. And boy, I saw this artwork. I thought of you because she was an art. And that's how I started to do some amends like it. And then at that time, she came out. I was living in Santa Fe at that time. And she came out and spent a week with me. And at the end, when I was, this is hard to believe, but anyways, at the end when she was leaving, she turned to me and she says, I do believe this is a reuniting of two sisters. And I thanked her and I was just thought that was just wonderful. That's not necessarily a happy ending because maybe I started recovery and stuff, but she started her, what does make any difference? But that, there was another thing that happened, but I'm open and understanding. So I want to get back to step eight. And step eight, I realized in order for me to make an amend or have a direct amend with somebody, there has to be something that changes in me. I can check it off and I can go to somebody and I can say, I'd like to know if I can do a direct amend with you. And it's very clear in here. You should ask somebody if they have time and you should run it by your sponsor, as far as I'm concerned, before you open your mouth to anyone, because more than likely, if you're like me, I ended up making several amends because I thought I could just handle it. And I wanted to make an amends because I wanted to feel better. It wasn't about really having a heartfelt shift in my being. And that only comes from God. After my seventh step, when I now do this and people say to me, how you doing? You'll hear me every once in a while say, I'm waiting on the Lord. And they don't know what I'm talking about, but I know what I'm talking about. I'm waiting for a shift. And when my seventh step is complete, because you see, if it's true what it says in the fifth step promises, I've started to realize that there's a God that's starting to communicate with me. And I feel as though I'm hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And there's a feeling that happens. It's not an intellectual thing. It's a feeling that happens. And so when I ask God from strength to go out from here to do his bidding, I by now have a set of values or principles that I realize that I'm trying to live by because I've done seven steps. And in order to do those and do those principles, spiritual principles about honesty and integrity and authenticity and, caring, discernment, things like that. I have to have God on board to do that. I can maybe do it with self-sufficiency enough, but it won't last. I have to have this presence with me. And I do believe that the eighth and ninth step is the steps that have pulled my covers. Hindsight, not that I knew this at this time, but there are difficult things that I've had to make amends for. And it wasn't until I understood that in my soul that I was going against God. So the top of my eighth step list is God. That's why? Because I never asked God for anything. I just went and did what I thought was right. And if I screwed it up, then I'd ask God. So I realized that part of my amends for the rest of my life is going to be to get in some kind of contact with a power greater than myself before I go out to do his bidding. I need to have that energy within me. And I can't be a phony about it, because one of my values, hopefully, is to be as authentic as I can. I had a kind of a horrible thing happen between 28 to 32 years. It was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, but at the time, it was like my Achilles heel. And what happened was is that either I was going to get this connection with this presence or I wasn't. And I got to a point where there was a situation that was happening that was unbearable. And I wrote a man's letter to the person. And I ran it by several people. And because I have sponsorship, I read it to my sponsor. And she said, very good letter. She said, you can send it in 10 days. Well, I thought that was ridiculous. I thought it was a three-day thing. But by God, on the 10th day when I woke up, I realized if I had sent that letter, it would be so that person wouldn't do what they were doing to me. It had nothing to do with an authentic amends. And at that point, I understood that the amends had to come from a different place. And it did. It ended up, it did. I made my amends. It was not accepted. It is probably one of my sad things, but I have an understanding, because with the result of a seventh step, I found forgiveness and compassion for myself as well as the other. And when that happens, it doesn't make any difference if a person accepts your amends or they don't accept your amends, because I'm right with my power, the power greater than myself. During this time, I talked to Don Coyes because I was so upset, and I had heard of his season things, and he was the one that gave me the light that I've never forgotten, and I do believe it comes in this eighth and ninth step. First of all, he said to me, have you done the work? When was the last time you did the work? Well, I do these steps yearly. I'm blessed that people have asked me to facilitate 12-step workshops, and I usually bring something through, so I'm pretty current. And he said, do you owe an amends? And I had one amend, and it was similar to what Katie was talking about. It had to do with something I'd done in recovery, and it was in regard to this company I worked for in Maine, who was paying men more than they were paying women, and we were doing the same job. And when they gave me an expense, you know, a thing for phone calls and stuff, I padded that, and I never gave them. I just kept using it. I just got, those days you didn't have cell phones, so I was doing this, and I remember Tom Yule said to me, how can you do that? That's stealing. I said, that might be your principle, but it's not mine. I deserve this. They did not pay women the way they paid the men. And I remember I justified that for a long time. And as the years went on, I would do this eighth and ninth step in the retreats. And I remember I turned to my friend, Missy, and I said, I owe an amends. And she said, for what? Because she knew I had this on my eighth step list. I said, because I was wrong. Doesn't make any difference if they're wrong. I was wrong on how I was handling it. And Don Pertz told me that. Just because you're wrong doesn't make the other person right. And that has eased open my ability to make a direct amends. I did make that amends. I wrote. I offered money. I did it in installments. I was willing to do. I had $500 I could start right off with. And the ethics officer called me back to tell me it was the time of Katrina. And this company was supporting I don't know, United Way or something. And he asked me to make a donation of $200 to this company. I said, well, I can do five. He said, I told you 200. And I said, thank you very much. And that was it. But that was the last old amends. But another wonderful man told me one time, just keep a blank piece of paper going, because you got to make that list. And every once in a while, in my nightly review, when I constructively review my day, I can see that I owe an amends or I'm sorry or something to somebody, and it goes on my list. It goes on my list. So I'm not done with this. I have 46 years of recovery, and I haven't made it anywhere. In fact, I think I'm newer sometimes than when I came in. But the whole world right now, the whole world is on the first step. They're powerless and their life's unmanageable. The difference for us in this fellowship is that we have 11 more steps we can do that they have no idea about. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you so much, Mary. Okay.